Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stink and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
A long December.
You might hear my voice. I lost my voice a little bit. A lot of the time I didn't know what to do. I was thought I should call play, and I realized I didn't have to actually hit the butt on the side a couple times to try to talk to Russell and didn't have a button there. But no, I really liked it. I thought it was fun to be part of a little bit more integral with the defense, right there for Ejiro if we needed timeouts, penalties, all that stuff, and special teams offense, just being around the guys more.
Orlando Franklin in for Stink, who's getting a day off. Oh. We just got done talking to Mike Kliss, who said, well, don't listen. Just because Nathaniel Hackett isn't calling plays anymore, he still fulfills an important role just as the overall head coach.
Yes.
Does Nathaniel Hackett strike you as football CEO type?
No.
If he's not calling plays, is there a whole lot of value to him being your head coach?
He does not strike me as football CEO type because we've seen the struggles. I've been here just like Bronco Country has been here. But at the same time, Mike, guys do play hard for Nathaniel Hackett. This past week, yes, we lost to the Las Vegas Raiders, but guys do play hard. Guys do go out there and put it on the line. Last night, watching Monday Night Football, got Troy Aikman calling out some defenders for the Arizona Cardinals. Guys are not playing hard for Vance Joseph out there in Arizona anymore. And that's just what the situation is. So each and every week, that's what I have watched for now because I know that we have a bad football team. I learned that right around the Indianapolis Colts game where I left with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. But I continue to watch guys lay it on the line for Nathaniel Hackett, give everything that they have. Now, and they might not have the best technique because they might not be getting coached up the best way out there at UC Health Training Center, but guys do still play hard for Nathaniel Hackett.
The news yesterday with the Broncos, of course, Melvin Gordon was released for just about everybody in Broncos country. What took so long, it led to this poem that we received here this morning. Roses are red, violets are blue, Melvin's on the one, the ball is on the two. Mm. Next in Four Down.
Second down.
I thought it was hard fought right from the drop of the puck. I liked their first. I thought the second they came at us a little bit. Third pretty even. I thought it was a good game. I thought we got better as this road trip went on. You know, the Carolina game was a little shaky. We got 2 points. Washington, we were better than we were in Carolina. I thought tonight we were better again. So I liked the defending aspect of our game tonight.
What a road trip for the Avalanche. You've got an Avalanche team that is banged up, is missing key guys, but yet that doesn't change the fact that they have an enormous bullseye on their back for everybody that plays them. Mm-hmm. And they had three teams on this road trip that you know that they were looking at this matchup with the Avs as a measuring stick game for them.
Yes.
And the Avs beat the Hurricanes in Carolina. Mm. They beat the Caps in D.C. And last night they beat the Stars in Dallas.
Yep.
And impressive.
Each game has had a different flavor, right? Each game, different people have had to step up. You got one game where you're saying, man, Frankie could be the starter for this team moving on because he absolutely plays amazing and stands on his head. You have another game that's a defensive stop where they're able to limit Carolina, a nice offensive team. They're able to eliminate their shots and hold them under 10 shots per period. Then you have last night where they're able to get it done against the Stars, and then you got Manson that throws hands and everybody. It's just
Jamie Benn.
Yeah, Jamie Benn.
Stacey's gloves.
Flinching, like before the fight, yeah, right?
He knew.
So I'm watching this team find ways to win. I'm watching this team say, man, you know what? We're missing a lot of guys, but our core, our nucleus, who we are, our identity is there each and every night, and we could change our style of play. We could change our style of play to tailor more defensively, or we could say, hey, the heck with that, and go win a game where we only have 14 shots on net. Right? So it's nice to see this team right now because they are getting their best shots from each and every team because they're at the top.
Congratulations to Cale Makar, who becomes the fastest defenseman in NHL history to reach 200 career points. Yeah, well on his way to becoming the GOAT. Next in four down.
Third down.
Here's a boot roll by Garoppolo left. Wide open is George Kittle down the left sideline. Kittle will break a tackle. Take it all the way to the end zone. Touchdown! San Francisco! How did George Kittle score there?
So, 49er radio. San Francisco rolls over Arizona, Mexico City, Monday Night Football, 38-10. What is it if you got Kyle Shanahan, obviously, byproduct of the West Coast offense. So is Nathaniel Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, when you watch Kyle Shanahan, and I don't use this term that I learned from Stink last week, you're not just simply calling plays, you're running an offense.
Yes.
What stands out to you with the way that Kyle Shanahan calls and runs an offense?
Well, I can tell you right now, because I was on those headsets last year and watched the behind the scenes. Kyle could go into a game and say, hey, this person's going to go off. Kittle's going to go nuts. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to go crazy here. The run game, we're going to run the ball 35 times. Heck, we might even get 40 runs. And when he goes into a game thinking that, the whole entire team thinks that as well, because he reiterates it. He makes sure Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he is repeating himself. He's letting the team know that, right? Where now each and every individual with all those different personalities, it's easy to buy into the team because you have a head coach, a play caller, a guy that you know loves you and cares about you off the field, but has never lied to you. And what he tells you each week, that's the game plan, and that's what he sticks to. So now it just develops that trust, and it creates a relationship and a bond that's unbreakable. So you have guys that will go out there and absolutely lay it on the line and do whatever that coaching staff says, because they truly believe in that coaching staff, because the staff has never steered them wrong. And that, when you have that with a football team, man, you're going to be rolling. Look at what's happened. Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't even on that football team. Now, all of a sudden, you got Troy Aikman talking on the sportscast on Monday Night Football. Forget a playoff team. Like, they stay healthy. This is a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. No, right? They absolutely are.
Because
absolutely.
That's what it is right now.
They
with
look
that
like
football team.
A feed me, growing beast. Absolutely. Yeah. Next in four down.
One, two, three.
Fourth down.
Pulisic on the run. Pulisic has Weah. Pulisic rolls it in. Tim Weah.
Pass Wayne Hennessy into the back of the net to give the United States their first World Cup goal in 8 years, and gives them the lead here in Qatar over Wales, 1-0.
First goal in World Cup action in 8 years, but not their first win, as a late penalty led to a penalty kick for Wales. They converted. U.S. gets a 1-1 draw in a game that... Everybody who is an expert in soccer, U.S. men's soccer, said they needed to get the win, the flat-out win in this, and that this is a very disappointing draw, especially since they had the game there to be won with about 10 minutes left, and they let it slip away. So I'm jumping in on the bandwagon. I'll admit it. I'm jumping in. I'm not usually a soccer fan, but then again, I usually don't watch swimming unless it's in the Olympics. So I'm doing the same thing here with the World Cup. And it sounds like somehow, some way, the U.S., if they're going to get out of pool play, they got to find a way to get a draw with England, which is going to be difficult, because the Three Lions looked very impressive in their win over Iran.
Yeah, well, last night it just looked like, well, yesterday at noon, it just looked like, for me, just hearing the stories, talking to different people that know a lot more than soccer, about soccer than me, is that the U.S. did a Denver Bronco, right? Where you get up. You figure out a way to be leading. You need a win, but some way, somehow, you end up being defeated, or you come up short, where you let this team stick around. Against the Titans, Broncos are up by 10. Against the Raiders, Broncos are up by 10. You take your foot off the gas pedal, and all of a sudden you start letting this team creep back in. All right, instead of keeping your foot on the gas pedal and now just absolutely demoralizing a team that you should. And when you're up and you have that lead, you got to find a way to play a whole entire game. That's the bottom line.
By the way, the news from this morning, Saudi Arabia stunned Messi and Argentina in what they're saying is one of the World Cup's biggest upsets ever. Saudi Arabia over Argentina 2-1. That'll do it for Four Down Territory. Got What's Trending at 7:30. Brock Huard, our Russell Wilson whisperer, will join us coming up at 7:45. Speaking of Russ, Orlando's going to take you inside, behind the scenes, and what Russell Wilson lacks that Peyton Manning had in abundance. That's next.
Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Orlando Franklin in for Stink, who's getting a day off. So we were talking about the Melvin Gordon release and the idea. For those who say that it's a case of too little, too late, the argument being that this losing culture that Nathaniel Hackett inherited, he's done nothing to improve it because he hasn't held people accountable.
Yes.
And that by making this move, again, too little, too late, because the damage has already been done from a lack of accountability standpoint. And losing culture, I have always said that changing around a losing culture might be the most difficult thing to do in all of professional sports. And you had the benefit of being here with Peyton Manning. Yeah. You saw a positive culture. You saw what goes into making a culture a winning culture, one that's accountable. Then you went to San Diego, and you said you could see and feel it night and day right from the moment you got there. They didn't have it. Texter said, but you had Phillip Rivers on that San Diego team. So why was it still a losing culture, O, even with a winning Hall of Fame-type quarterback? Was it the coaches or the players or the quarterback?
Yeah. So the difference between, you know, Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning, first of all, when I got drafted to the Denver Broncos, I got drafted to a winning culture. And this fan base made it known to me immediately. Hey, 4-8, no, or 4-12, not good enough. Like, that's not our expectations. Our expectations is that we're going to be in the playoffs each and every year. And I'm looking around like, man, I just got here. Like, what do you mean? But you go through the Tim Tebow era, and we're able to win football games. We get to the second round of the playoffs. We win a playoff game some way, somehow. And you're feeling okay about the situation, but you know that what you're doing is not sustainable. And then Peyton Manning walks in. And Peyton had three characteristics that Phillip Rivers didn't have, in my opinion. Peyton truly was a aloha. That's what Peyton was. He truly was that person. It didn't matter who you were. One of my earliest memories of Peyton Manning is watching Peyton absolutely go ballistic on Demaryius Thomas, because Demaryius is running a route in OTAs in 2012, right after we just got him, and this route is supposed to be ran at 17 yards, and Demaryius cuts it short at 15. Peyton says, run it again. Cuts it short again. And then Peyton loses his mind. He says, hey, is that route supposed to be at 15 or did I say 17? And I'm watching Peyton go nuts on wide receiver one.
In May.
In April.
April.
I'm watching him go berserk on this guy. And that's arguably the most important person to him. I'm the right tackle. Probably the, like, if not the 11th most important person to him on this offense, maybe the 10th, right? There's so many other people that you're going to look at who he's going to rely on before me. So I'm watching Peyton go nuts on DT. I'm watching him now later on go nuts on Cody Latimer, second round pick. He's not going to be in there, Tyke. So why is he in there in practice? I'm not throwing the ball on Sunday, so he shouldn't be getting this rep. I'm watching Peyton lose his mind on Tyke Tolbert, the wide receiver coach, for handing out papers. Papers, Mike. It's a Wednesday morning, and the team meeting just started, and we're starting to talk about the offense, and Tyke is handing out his offensive papers to the wide receivers, and Peyton's saying, what are you doing? Like, that should have been done. Tyke was like, hey, they just showed up, so I'm getting done. And these guys literally got into a little bit of back and forth, and you're saying, man, this is the coach. Like, I'm uncomfortable right now, but this is also Peyton. So, one, Peyton was truly an aloha, right? It didn't matter who you were, player, coach, it did not matter. That's how he operated each and every day. Two, the next big characteristic that was different from Phillip Rivers, the obsession of winning. We always talked about different scenarios. We always talked about different things when it came to Peyton. We worked situational football. That 3rd and 10 that we just watched Russell Wilson throw that football after a timeout, that would have never happened with 18, because he's either throwing it up because the guy is wide open and it's a touchdown and we just sealed the game, or he's going to self-sack in a situation like that. But he's not throwing that football. And everybody would have known the situation. That was something never happened with Phillip Rivers as well. The Aloha.
What was Rivers then?
The Aloha aspect when it came to Rivers, it just never was there.
What's Aloha, by the way?
You know what?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I gotcha. Aloha.
Ah.
A guy that doesn't care. It does not matter who you are.
Okay.
But I watched Phillip have wide receivers go out there and say, okay, the wide receiver messes up, and Phillip is like, come on. Okay, you know what? A coach is calling a play that he doesn't like, and he's shaking his head in the huddle, saying, I have no idea why they just called this. This is not going to work, but yeah, he's still calling the play. Peyton, you can't do that. Peyton's sitting there. You call a play that he doesn't like, he'll wave you off so quick and tell you to stop talking. I got it from here. You keep quiet. Like, let the adults operate right now. There's been so many times where, whether it was Mike McCoy or Adam Gase, where Peyton's like, yeah, stop talking. Stop talking. I got it. Like, we're going to the line of scrimmage. I'm running the show here on up. I've watched guys mess up for Peyton and watched them get benched versus Phillip Rivers. Guys mess up. And the next play, Phillip Rivers is literally just telling them what to do. Hey, this is the play. You have this route. Make sure that you run this route at this depth.
So let's bring it back.
Never doing that.
Let's bring it back now to Russ then. So you got some people you talk to over there. Who and what is Russ then? Is he more Phillip Rivers? Is he more Peyton Manning?
I think Russ is a category of his own. Because Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning both understood that they needed the 10 guys that were around them. Russ constantly talks about, well, I've been here before. There's nobody better than to get us out of this situation than me. You know, and his belief is, no matter what, that he is the outlier, that he's going to rise to the occasion. But football's the ultimate team sport. You have to rely on the 10 guys around you. It's not like basketball. It's not like hockey, where Cale Makar could go out there on a power play and snipe one and get to us 200th.
Even
goal.
When the 10 guys around you are guys that have only known losing, you're the only guy on that side of the ball that has experienced winning.
That's the problem.
Shouldn't he kind of hold himself up as, I know what it takes. I've been there. Follow me. Yeah. Follow my lead.
Yeah, but that's not what I get from Russell Wilson. It's, I know what it takes, I've been there, and I will get this thing right. We heard him talking about the conception of him liking to be in the shotgun more than center. He talks about, well, I've done a lot in my career. Mm-hmm. Just because you've done a lot doesn't mean anything. I just tell you this just really quick, Mike. I told on these very areas in week 3, I talked about Trent Williams giving up his stance every single time. He'll tell you what he's doing. He'll tell you if it's run. He'll tell you if it's pass. He'll tell you if it's run away. He'll tell you if it's pass away, depending on how his stance is. But Trent Williams is the most athletic left tackle in the National Football League. So that doesn't hurt him nor bother him. But when he tips it off, it hurts the left guard, because the left guard, his ability is a little bit under, right? So now Russ is here, and he's talking about the things that he's done. Great. But that being in gun doesn't hurt you, but it hurts your third-string left tackle. It hurts your third-string center when we're on Luke Wattenberg a couple weeks ago. It hurts your fourth-string right tackle when we're on Quinn Bailey a couple weeks ago. It hurts basically your rookie right guard that played Division II football, three football 2 years ago. It hurts your left guard that has regressed as well. So Russ constantly talks about him and what he's done, not realizing that, hey, it's a team aspect, and if you could benefit the team by going under center or doing something a little bit different, that's what you have to do. It's not just about you and how you've been comfortable in the past.
Good stuff. What's trending coming up next? Hey, as bad as it is for Russell Wilson, there's actually an NFL quarterback right now who has it worse. Tell you about it next.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with What's Trending right now.
Well, the Avalanche beat Dallas last night. Orlando Franklin in for stink this morning. The Avs beat Dallas last night, but a huge, huge milestone besides the win. Cale Makar became the fastest defenseman in NHL history to reach 200 career points. And, oh, when you think about it, not only is this a game that's been played for a century, but there have been eras in the NHL where the style of play was wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Wide open. It is definitely a fast game right now, but in terms of just the wide openness, it has existed before, and guys have put up huge numbers. So for Makar to be the fastest to get to 200 as a defenseman is an amazing, amazing achievement, and it only supports my belief that if I was starting a team today, all apologies to Nathan MacKinnon, all apologies to Connor McDavid, I'd start it with Cale Makar.
Really?
Yeah, because of his ability to dominate all 200 feet of the ice.
Mm.
He can go out and be a prolific scorer on one end.
Mm.
He can be a shutdown defender on the other end.
Yeah.
And what more could you ask for?
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Mike. And here's why. Here's the icing on the cake for me. It's because just the sustainability of play. Nathan MacKinnon is all gas, no breaks, right? And those line changes, it's about a minute, 30, minute 45 max when Nate's out there because of how he plays, right? And when you look at just a guy that could be out there for the maximum amount of minutes, that's going to be Cale Makar.
Yeah.
So for me, I would be right there with you. And Cale showed you yesterday, fastest guy to 200 points, defenseman. Just unbelievable what this young man has been able to contribute to this hockey team in a short span. Last year, winning the Connor Smythe. You know that Nathan MacKinnon is salivating at the mouth, wants one of those trophies as well. So we'll see if the Avs get back there and Nate could get one. But Cale Makar is here to stay, and he's already got one of those. It's kind of like, what's next for this guy? Unbelievable start to his career, and hopefully he continues to rise and continue. I don't even know what's next. Like what's the next goal for Cale Makar?
It's not necessarily reaching the next goal. It's just cementing his legacy as maybe the greatest of them all when it's all said and done. Hold on. There we go. Ed McCaffrey out as head coach at Northern Colorado after two full seasons, went 3-8 in both years. And this was one of those, it was kind of like a Jeff Saturday thing.
Yeah.
Where you brought in a guy with a limited coaching experience at the high school level and, you know, hope that he'd be able to parlay his name, his celebrity, his fame into success in Greeley. And it just did not happen. He made it a family affair. He had two of his sons involved. Max McCaffrey was the offense coordinator. Dylan McCaffrey was the quarterback, but it just did not work out for Ed McCaffrey at UNC.
Yeah, and this was somewhat inevitable, right? I mean, when you're taking that job out there at UNC, I did not know what UNC, the expectations were going to be. You know, if it was a two-year audition, which typically that's what it is when it comes to head coaches, I don't know how much you expected him to change that program. So, unfortunately, he's out. We'll see what Ed does next with his future endeavors. But for me, this was kind of a writing on the wall when I heard he was taking the job. I was like, okay, so this is a 2 or 3 year thing, max. Maybe he's able to parlay some wins and somebody else comes and scoops him up, but he's not going to be there past 3 years. And unfortunately, he hasn't even made it past two.
Well, as bad as it is for Russell Wilson and the Broncos offense, you could be Zach Wilson, who he's just getting destroyed. And social media having a blast with all the ways to describe how bad the Jets offense was in the second half in their game against New England. They had 7 yards of total offense in the second half. They averaged 2.77 inches per play. The Jets had 9 completions and 10 punts on the day. Oh, let's keep going. Let's keep going. The New York Jets have more letters in their name, 11, than yards in the second half, 7. More feet of snow. More feet of snow fell in Buffalo than the Jets had first downs.
Well, unfortunately, Zach Wilson just really kind of put his foot in his mouth after the game.
And then came out and said,
What did he say exactly? He was like, hey, I don't feel bad. That
he was asked, do you feel like the offense let the defense down? And he said, no.
Yeah, flat out no. And now there's scrutiny behind it because anytime that your offense goes out there and has a day like that, you're a part of the problem. You're not a part of the solution. And Zach Wilson, by the way, what the heck have you done in the National Football League to sit there. You have an amazing defense. Thank goodness that you were in that game the whole entire time because of it. But you have to be able to generate more offensively. So for me, if I was Robert Saleh, even before the comments, I would have never been committed to Zach Wilson moving forward because that was a horrible game. But then after the comments, you have to think that, hey, man, this kid doesn't get it. Might have to sit him down on the sidelines this week so he could actually get it, because that's never going to be nowhere near acceptable. And just walking around like you weren't a part of the problem with your head all high in the locker room. Come on, man. This is football. You got to do something and hold your end of the deal. Football is surrounded by three phases. All three phases have to do something in order to have an opportunity to win football games.
The Chiefs, Mecole Hardman, was not able to play in the Sunday night game against the Chargers. A last second win for the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, that guy, doing it again.
I'm here.
But Mecole Hardman admitted to shattering his TV during the game, that he got so tense that he threw his remote at the television, broke his TV, and then posted pictures as proof. Oh. First of all, I know you probably had to miss a game here and there.
I missed the first, my return back here to Colorado, 2015, last game of the season.
You missed it.
Stayed in San Diego, had a concussion the week before, wasn't right. They couldn't get me on the flight.
What was it like watching the game?
Horrible. Horrible. Because not only do I know everybody that's on the Chargers field, I know everybody that's on the Broncos field. And that was my first return to Colorado, right? And going back to Empower Field and coming back. So for me, it was absolutely a nightmare. And I could sympathize with Mecole Hardman because I had to turn the game off at one point because I was so frustrated with the plays that are being called. I could sit there and know what we're calling. It's like, why did we go to that? And then now my backup is messing up. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, if I was there, that would be more. And I just got too tense and too frustrated, so I had to turn it off. Would never throw the remote at the TV because I don't want to have to buy another TV, but I could sympathize with what Hardman went through.
That is what is trending. Up next, Brock Huard, our Russell Wilson whisperer. I want to ask Brock why, after weeks of giving the Heisman to Nathaniel Hackett when it came to doing some things differently on offense, he seemed willing to do it with Clint Kubiak in week one. Brock Huard joins us next.
Loosen up those joints and muscles. It's time for your 7:45 stretch. Here's Schlereth and Evans with the biggest story in Denver sports.
Orlando Franklin in for a stink off today. Brock Huard will join us here in just a second for his weekly visit with us. Calls me out a few weeks ago for being late. Now I've been the one on time, even early the last few weeks. He's the one showing up late. Accountability, man. Death by inches.
An hour behind in Seattle right now?
Yeah, he's starting his show here in, he's starting his show in about 15 minutes.
So he's struggling to get some show prep.
I don't know.
Right?
You know, I don't know.
49ers just tied it up. Seattle's not just at the top of that division no more.
Oh, yeah. They're probably worried in Seattle right now, right? They're worried. They're worried. Because Seattle's now looking at San Francisco, right? Brock Huard of Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports 710 joining us courtesy of Elite Sportsbook. Man, those 49ers look like a growing beast, a growing monster right now.
I don't know. I'm looking at draft boards. I'm looking at the number five pick in the draft.
Oh, you.
That's a low blow, bro.
That's a low blow. But I respect you. I respect you. That's well played. That was well played. Yeah, it's,
golly.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
What is Marilat doing, by the way, around that building? Because first, right, they were 7-1. And oh, my gosh, there's no way they're going to be 7-1. And then he rewrites it after, I think, the bye week. He's like, okay, now here comes the turn. And it's just loss. Is Marilat all right?
You know, we hold James accountable the same way the Broncos held Melvin Gordon accountable for a long time.
We have been cracking down on him the last couple of weeks, especially with the soft comment that he made when the Bills game got moved to Detroit. So we have been cracking down on him a little bit.
Trying. Hey, as a football guy yourself, what took so long for the Broncos and Nathaniel Hackett to say enough's enough with Melvin Gordon?
I think the injury to Williams is a big part of that, unfortunately, right? You bring in others, but you lose him, you lose your best running back. And so you're just looking, and the number of times Nathaniel has said this, oh, he's a pro. I think, you know, once the season begins and he understands how to play the game on Sundays, he is a pro. He doesn't understand the value of the football. He doesn't understand how to take care of it. I'd have been done when he didn't come to any of the offseason. I'd have been done. I'll go back 12 years to Pete Carroll and John Schneider when they built it. And I heard you, Mike, talk about a winning culture and how hard that is to turn and how hard it is to build. And way back then, they made like a record 400 transactions as they built the team the first time around. And they had T.J. Houshmandzadeh and Lendell White. And those were two of the casualties. And T.J. had signed a pretty good deal. It played great in Cincinnati. And it just never bought. He just didn't buy Pete. And he was out. And then here comes Lendell White. And Lendell White, remember, with Reggie Bush, was the 1-2 punch. It was a huge part of the dynasty at SC. And Lendell came out late one time, got like extra tape, a pretty spat on his ankle, and he's gone the next day. And you just, when Melvin decided, after all of this, and even after the struggles on and off the field a year ago, to say, yeah, I'm good. You all do your OTAs. You do your kumbaya. You do your team build stuff. I'm out. I'll come and be the pro during the season. No way, no how would I have ever signed him into the culture.
Yeah. Brock, you watch Russell for over a decade out there in Seattle, and I just, at the end of the game, he has an opportunity, you know, the timeout, there's a minute and 53 seconds left. He comes out, and you got to be thinking either touchdown or you're going down in a situation like that to keep the clock running. Have you ever seen him make a bigger mistake? Because for me, it's like you talk about being obsessed with winning. You talk about let's ride. You talk about all these different things. Mm-hmm. But yet you just hurt this football team. That's an extra at least 38 seconds that you're able to run off if you self-sack in that situation. And now the Raiders are getting the ball back with what's that, a minute and 20 seconds instead? Yeah.
Well, you talk about accountability. That is such a buzzword right alongside culture, and sometimes hard to define. And what does that really look like? And is it just, oh, we got to fire a coach or fire a player? And is that the best way to always hold people accountable? You know, Pete did it, and again, to come back to Pete in the 10, 12 years there in Seattle, he did it a little different way, and he would typically always cover. Whether Richard Sherman lost his mind, screaming to coaches, whatever it was, he would cover. Well, last year was one of the first times Pete didn't cover. And I remember Salk and I making a big deal of it, and people were like, man, why y'all making a big deal of it? Yeah, they're fine. You know, you could tell they weren't fine because he took a sack late in the game. I want to say it was against the Bears. It was a bad opponent, and he takes this sack late in the game, and it knocks like a 30-yard field goal to a 45-yard field goal, and he misses. And in the press conference, Pete, for one of the first times ever in 10 years, just said, you know, we got to throw that ball away. And Russ then comes aboard about 10 minutes later, right, 15 minutes later, and is asked about it. One of the reporters said, hey, you know, Pete just got done. And you know, he said, you got to throw that ball away. And he had his little chuckle, and he had his little chuckle.
We've heard it.
And he's like, I'm trying to make a play. And for 10 years, I made winning plays. And I'm about, you know, winning. And, yeah, that chuckle. And it was like, uh-oh, this is not good. And even in that moment, and Mike, after the game, own it, Russ. Own it right there. Own it and just say, you know what? I got to be better. I can't throw that ball away. And while I do have just an aggressive playmaking, that was just a foolish play, and it cost us. And the equity you build with people and teammates to just own it. Just say, I'm not perfect, right? And be just a little vulnerable, I think goes a long way in that accountability thing.
So we saw it this week. You've seen it before. You've watched Russ. I know Russell Wilson is a smart guy, but does he have good football smarts? Because there are these plays that make me question whether he does.
I think his greatest strength from a football IQ QB playing standpoint is taking care of the football. And that is the one thing. There's no touchdowns this year. How many touchdowns has he thrown? I think as many letters as New York Jets, I believe. I may be wrong on that, but
less than that.
Right now, he's trending to have more bathrooms in his house than touchdowns this year.
I saw that. I think we're at 7 touchdowns, right?
Yeah, seven.
He has played 9 of the games. Yikes. So he, but on the flip side, I think five interceptions, something of that nature, one of them tipped. So, I mean, he, that's the one thing that he has a tremendous governor on. And I think in that moment was not going to force it on the run. Was a receiver there on that third and 10? Could he have taken more risk with the ball? Maybe waited a beat, maybe thrown it into a little tighter window. He's just not going to do that.
Yeah, but what about understanding at that moment? Just. Sit down and let, you know, just take a self-sack and let the clock keep running.
Yeah, he's usually pretty good with that stuff. He, usually for 10 years, and it's why he was the greatest winner in those 10 years. He usually understood those deals. I don't know if it was they did more of the situational work, if there were reminders from Pete. I mean, that's, the thing in Denver, let's just be totally blunt and honest. Right now, it is completely disconnected. They look like the Arizona Cardinals last night. When I watch Cliff Kingsbury, I see a totally disconnected football team. Yeah. The Broncos are injured. You've lost your best receiver, your best tackle, your best running back, your center. You've lost so many components. And at every turn, they just feel disjointed and disconnected. And that's why you see some of these plays. The interception against, who was that, the Colts? Down in the red zone. You could pile together, Mike, a pretty strong list for yourself and say, hey, man, football IQ wise, I've got half a dozen plays this year that are inexplicable for an 11-year player.
Yeah. And that's what I want to ask you about, Brock, because it is an 11-year player. It is a player that has used his legs for over a decade in this league. You've seen everything defenses are going to throw at you, but yet each and every week, Russ goes up there and talks about, like, if anybody could get us through this, it's me. And, you know, I'm going to do this, and I've done this, and I've played under center. I've had a lot of success. I've had a lot of success without the wristband. And just things like that, where he kind of just always talks about himself. But football, you know it as I know it, Brock, it's an ultimate team sport. And just because you could have success doing something doesn't mean that your third string left tackle is going to have that same success or your third string center or the fact that you've lost your best receiver. Now it's next man up, but doesn't mean that these next man up guys are going to be able to have that success. So why is there such a big disconnect when it comes to Russell Wilson and just understanding that A, the next man up is never as good as the first man up, the starter, the backup is never, there's a reason why that person's the backup, but also at some point you have to tailor and adapt and adjust your style of play to the 10 guys that are around you because that's the only way you're going to have success.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the same thing again. I'll just point to just disconnected. And, you know, we talked, Mike, a lot about this and Stink and all over the fan of early on when Nathaniel's just like, hey, we're going to do what Russ wants to do. Hey, we're going to build this thing around Russ. He's still, right, still talking about, yeah, we got to find plays with Russ. No.
So you're going to have to burn it down essentially then if you're going to build it around Russ.
Eliminate I and eliminate Russ and just use the pronoun we. And for goodness sakes, don't ever talk about we're close. There's life experience of 14 years of college and pro. Here's the two things that get you fired at both levels. At the college level, if you continually hear a coach say, we're young. Oh, we're just young. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're young. I'm sorry. You're fired because everybody is young and everybody has new transfers and new faces and playing freshmen. And Pete changed that, by the way, at SC and started playing young people and freshmen is in the early 2000s and the game has gone young. And I'm sorry that is, you're going to get fired. And in the NFL, you get fired if you continue to say we're so close. Oh, it's a play or two. It's a one score game. That is the NFL. I'm not smart enough to figure out a new acronym for not for long, but it's if you were to put those three letters with something along the lines of, you know, hey, we're close, like, no. Nope. That gets you gone. Because every stinking game is close all around the league, and every game for the last, I don't know, 20 years in this league is defined by four or five plays a game that make the difference. So those are words that they just simply, all of them, between Russ's first name, the pronoun I, and we're close. You better flush all that stuff, Mike, if you're going to do what you want and start to turn a culture there in that building.
Real quick, Brock, you talk about how you just see and feel the disconnect. You've been watching Russ out on the field for years. When you watch him right now, what do you see in his body language, on his face? Do you see, is he unsure? Do you see a loss of confidence? What do you see? Body language, facial expressions, what do you see?
Yeah, body language-wise, he has always been neutral. That's just what he is. I've listened to some of you guys, and I've heard people, and Linda, my hairdresser, has said, gosh, you just sometimes look like a zombie out there. But that is from a neutral psychology and competition. Doesn't get high, doesn't get low. People miss kicks. People miss play. Like, just that's the way he operates and has always operated, and that's not changing. When I see disconnected, I just see the entirety of the group. That either A, doesn't know situations, B, puts together a couple great drives and then goes to sleep for two or three. They're still running awfully simplistic stuff. I know Orlovsky was on with you guys after the game in London, and he said it like, yeah, I mean, they're just running the most basic of basic stuff. You're not seeing a lot of tempo. You're not seeing a ton of different formations and personnel groups. You're not seeing them be able to get in and out of formations and show one thing and get to another and get to the line with a ton of check with me. It is about as basic to me as it looks right now. And with all the backups playing, obviously that's not good enough.
Brock, early.
Oh, we got to let him go. Got to let him go. He's got a roll. He's got a show to get ready for.
Yeah, boys.
But I appreciate it, Brock. Happy Thanksgiving to your family, and we'll see you again next week.
Sounds good, boys. See you.
All right, there he goes. Brock Huard of Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports 710. Join us courtesy of Elite Sportsbook. I know you wanted to ask him more.
Mike, he's
on a tight schedule.
Yeah, I know. But Mike, my biggest fear right now with what I'm hearing and just hearing Brock talk about, you know, what Pete did when Pete first got there in Seattle and record-breaking 400 transactions. My biggest fear right now is that we're going to have to completely, like, strip this thing down.
It feels like that, doesn't it? It does.
Around a 33-year-old quarterback that is trying to reinvent himself as far as how he plays the game of football, wanted to be this guy that cooks and does it from the pocket. And he's 33, though. Like, I know that he's here for the next 5 years, essentially, because the contract's guaranteed, but that's what it sounds like to me, that's the only way that this thing is going to turn around.
Does this thing need to be stripped down to the studs?
I think it does. You know,
but talk about what you see when you watch this team and you see the way that they go about their business and you see the lack of accountability and you hear some things that go on over at that building that make you think that there's not a whole lot of professionalism and work ethic and guys being true pros, then is it something that all the bad apples need to be weeded out?
Yes.
And that this may involve stripping it down to the studs.
Yes.
Okay.
Because when you look at it with Vic Fangio, right, and we thought we got over the hump, and it just reared its ugly head this Sunday. Let's be honest, Broncos country. Let's tell the truth. Vic Fangio's defense, what were they always accused of? Those big-time situations that they would not hold in the end. Well, this Sunday, defense got out there, overtime, didn't hold, right? It was quick and easy for the Las Vegas Raiders to go down the field and score that touchdown. So now it's rearing its ugly head with Nathaniel Hackett's system, right? Because the defense, it was firing on all cylinders. And yes, the defense has played their butts off. And it's one of the best defenses in the National Football League this year, absolutely. But now we're seeing the little breakdowns. We're seeing the things that we have been able to rely on all year now absolutely go in a different direction. So you couple that with the fact that you look at this offense and you look at the leaders, the core players on offense, they haven't won, but each and every week, there is a mistake aspect to it. Each and every player wants to be able to have the ability, Mike, to say, my bad. You know, hey, I just gave up a pressure. My bad, guys. I'll get him next time. Cortland Sutton, I just got the block in the back. My bad, guys. I'll make it up. Cortland Sutton, I had a drop. My bad. I'll make it up. You know, Cortland's having two my bad moments each and every week, right? Kendall Hinton, I thought Kendall played his butt off. But Kendall, at the start of the year, you're like the fifth wide receiver. You're not dressing for this team. You're on practice squad. You can't afford to go out there and drop any footballs. So now when I see these guys go out there, and we already know what has happened with Melvin Gordon, and we have already talked about the culture, the losing culture aspect of it. Yes, you got to strip it down. These guys don't know how to win. Even the leaders, the core players, they don't know how to win. Has Justin Simmons ever been a part of a football team when you go down or it's the end of a game where you're like, man, you know what? We're going to pull this out, or we're going to go into overtime and it's our game. It used to mean something when you were playing at Empower Field in altitude with this fan base, with the defenses that Denver's always been able to field. It used to mean something when you got to overtime because it probably meant about 80% of the time you were going
to
win.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.